We're doing the Sefer Amidot. We're up to page Shin Zayin, Shara Gava. And the Magen Midubna described that arrogance causes one to alienate his own family. His own family hates him. It causes one to alienate even people outside his home. It's very difficult for people to connect with a person when he's always focused on his own honor. And if you want to really see the truth in what I'm saying, go look around, meet the people outside, he says, in the marketplace. He means in general, meet those that are haughty. You meet them at every corner seeking their own honor and greatness, and they're not embarrassed. They're happy to tell you to toot their own horn. And when you speak to them, the only thing you'll hear in conversation with them is their pride, how great they are. Yet if you try to find out about these people, do some research, you'll find out that people have a lot of negative things to say about them. Because when a person is arrogant, so he's never comforted. The more a person thinks, I deserve better. You know how great I am? I should really have everyone bowing to me. If only people knew what a brilliant person I was, people would treat me so much better. The more a person thinks he deserves better, the more he encounters disappointments and sorrow in his life. Because his desires are so many, they are so great, like a swarm of locusts. And there's no limit to what he desires. Because everything he sees, he figures, that should be mine, of course. And his soul is always yearning. When? Maybe that's going to be it. And the wise king, King Solomon, peace be upon him, he already said, the illness of the heart is when one has continued, prolonged hope. You keep hoping this will happen. Maybe now, maybe now, maybe now. That's what causes heartache. When Rav Pesin Zatzal, his father-in-law was rabbi in Brooklyn. And they had a neighbor across the street. It's a long story. On a different occasion, I should tell you the whole story. Rav Pesin's widow once told me it's a beautiful story about the relationship between her father and this neighbor across the street who didn't keep Shabbos. But at one point, he was in the hospital. And the Rav, he needed to give a message to that woman. And he personally went over to give the message, and he was already an old man. And he was always careful. He wouldn't set foot in their house. As much as he respected them and honored them, he said, if they don't keep Shabbos, he doesn't walk into that house. He'll talk to them, he did them a lot of favors. He did what he could on their behalf, but always from the outside. So his daughter once asked him, she said, Abba, you're an old man. It's hard for you to walk. Why did you have to go across the street to go and give her the message? Now, the wife. So he said to her, look, this woman, her husband is in the hospital in critical care. Undoubtedly, every time the phone rings, for the last few weeks, ever since he's been hospitalized, her heart jumps a beat. She's always scared, maybe this is the phone call where they're telling me he passed away. I couldn't do that to her, to call her to save myself the walk. So even though it's hard for me to walk and cross the street, I went to knock on the door and give her the message. So I'm reminded of that because Shlomo HaMelech says when a person has that feeling any minute now the phone call is going to come, that's what causes heartache. When you have, he's speaking about the positive. You keep hoping they're going to call me and tell me I got the job. You guys ever have that? Yeah, you apply for a job and every phone call, every time you open your email and then you keep refreshing the page. Maybe they sent it now. That's machalalev, because ultimately when it doesn't happen, so that hope that you keep hoping, maybe now, that really is what causes heartache. Now when a person is arrogant, this is like a disease. What happens is he looks at everything and thinks he should have it. And then when he doesn't have it, so then it's as though you took something from him. And he mourns over losing it. Now, if you think this is far-fetched, we all have this degree. One of the great lessons I learned, I forgot his name. I think it was Jack Welch. In his book on finance, he says one of the mistakes that most people make is, let's say you bought a stock at 1,000 and you sold it at 3,000. So you made 2,000 profit, right? Could be you bought 5 shares, you made 10,000 profit. People continue to follow that stock. And when they see that stock hitting 100, they kick themselves and they say, I could have made $100,000. And he says, that's a mistake. You made profit. The fact that you didn't make more profit isn't a loss. Very often we look at profit that we didn't make as though we lost something. You didn't lose anything. You can't work that way. What you gained, you gained. What you didn't gain is not lost. Profit. So we're all that way to a degree. We all have that feeling after you pull out, you look and see, well, what did it do later? Maybe I should have stayed in.
You buy a house, right, for $20,000, you sell it for $40,000, and you're happy until you hear that the guy you sold to for $40,000 2 years later sells it for $150,000.
So this is something which, going back to the idea, you're saying it stems from a certain arrogance. If I could, I don't have to look at everything and say, oh, they took that from me. Who says I should have had it? But part of arrogance is that a person thinks he should have everything. And then everything he doesn't have becomes a source of disappointment. Yeah?
Yeah. I have another example for that, which happened to me recently. It's the exact same thing of like realizing that not gaining does not mean that you're losing, which is chagim. You can't work on chagim. You can start making all kinds of calculations about how much money you're losing by not working on chagim until you realize, I'm not losing anything, I'm just not gaining.
Yeah.
It's totally destructive in every way. It preoccupies you. And then, what did you do with the money that you sold? Did you do this or did you? Because you have to pay tax on it. The whole, you lose yourself. I see it.
ולא תחשוב עליו לדמה או לחומר ומתווה דבר, חומד ומתווה דבר נאם מה שאפשר לחומד להשיג בהתגלגלות הימים וימלא חפץ נפשו. And he says, don't confuse this with someone who wants something materialistic. You have a situation where a person says, I want a car. So he saves up and he saves up and finally he gets the car and then he can be happy with the car. No, this is a trait that's a part of a personality. And when a person has this trait, he will never be happy. It doesn't matter what he'll have. It's a part of his personality, and he says it goes hand in hand with arrogance. The trait that a person, when he's arrogant, feels like anything good, he should really have it too. If there's something good out there, then why doesn't he have it also? That's part of the arrogance, where a person feels like he's so great, why doesn't he have that also? And then...
Wait. He's so great, meaning...
If a person in his own eyes is so great... So part of feeling that about themselves is that they're disappointed that they don't have what other people have. Because, come on, a guy like me, how could it be I don't have that?
So what does that have to do with someone who just, you know, it's like, all right, I can use a car and save
He says that's not the same thing. He says don't confuse the two. I could tell you that I've seen this numerous times. We had a... Okay, I can't give too many details. I'll tell you the scenario, but I've seen it numerous times repeat itself, where you have a guy who's super brilliant, super successful, and he succeeds in everything. He's top of his class. And he's the best basketball player, and he's a black belt, and he's, you know, he's popular. And then one day you meet him and he's trying to commit suicide. And you say, why? Because it all stemmed from an unhealthy place psychologically. He didn't have a healthy self-esteem. He always needed everyone else to say he was great. And so he was never happy. They never said he was great enough. And then when one guy makes a crack and everyone else laughs at him, so then his whole world collapsed. Because the world he's created is built on, what does everyone else say about me? I saw a guy like this, and he tried to commit suicide, and then he went for therapy, and I thought everything was better. Until one day, he calls me up and says, hi, I want to come over and say hi. So I say, okay. I'm home, you know, I'm home for the next hour. He says, I'll be over in 5 minutes. I hear a sports car pulling up in front of the house. I see this big Corvette, like this big sports car. And he comes out, and there's a girl dressed like a model standing next to him. And I'm like, this is my car, and this is my wife. And I'm thinking, oh boy, he's at it again on a bigger scale. You know, now he's driving a Corvette, and he's he had nothing to say to me. Like, I'm standing there, and I'm wondering, what did he want to say? He wanted to show me the car and the wife. We hadn't spoken in 3 years, but come, see the car, see the wife. It's great to see you. How are you? That was already too much for him. Then he's got to go.
It's sad, very sad, because, you know, he's basically, you know, the whole identification is, you know, I'm nothing, but if I have this, I must be something. You can even do that with learning. I mean, it's you can do it with, you know. I mean, I guess if you're better than a corporate model, but at least you get learning. But right, for the motivation, that it's ironic because you describe it, I think, correctly as someone who projects the idea that I'm entitled to everything because I'm so great, when in fact it's just the opposite. The poor guy really deep down feels he's so nothing, and he thinks, or she thinks, whatever, if I have this big house, everybody will think I'm this, you know, kind of house. If I have this young, good-looking girl on my arm, they'll think I'm this great guy. If I have this husband with a fat wallet, I'm better. All that stems from not thinking that you're really worth too much, I think. Seems to be anyway.
Yeah, so I'm saying, but today I find that this idea that the Magen Midvina describes is very prevalent specifically with successful people. And you have a lot of successful people where if society gauges us based on our job, our wallets, the cars we drive. Someone said it used to be you were gauged by the car you drive, today you're gauged by the phone you hold. So that's a problem. I'm saying, again, if it's one thing, okay. If it's an attitude, if it's an attitude, then it's really self-destructive. Unfortunately, I've seen highly successful people end up in hospitals and with mental illness because they didn't build from within. On the contrary, they had a lot to be proud of. I'm telling you, these people were brilliant. You're talking about people who skipped classes, people who got 1600s on their SATs and were accepted to the top colleges with top scholarships. And then I'm going through my head one after another. One committed suicide before he made it to college. The second one committed suicide after he was a successful lawyer in the Empire State Building. You're talking about really a top lawyer. The third one, I don't know where he's holding today. I'm saying I'm going through the list. The fourth one spent, I think, 2 years of his life in a mental institution. And these were really successful people. These are people who really, they had what to be proud of. But the arrogance, they were gifted.
Right.
They were the top of their class. But that it was the arrogance. It was, let everyone praise me. They don't know. They should all see how great I am. Well, if that's where life is leading me, so then I end up feeling very empty.
Also, the efforts, mistaking your gifts for your efforts. I mean, if Hashem blesses you with these kind of parents and this kind of IQ and this kind of born in the United States instead of Darfur or whatever, and to think that, you know, I'm entitled, I did this on my own, you get a very false sense that hopefully you know, it's it because it's terrible for, and then you have Madison Avenue reinforcing it because it's got a good economy and it spirals out of control. And but it's even more susceptible. You know, that's the thing. I mean, what did John Paul Getty say? I think it's attributed to him. How much is enough money? So a little more. It's, you know, like you was it saying, nobody, if you want 100, you get 200 and anything. So it's not other guys. You're better off in a sense. If you have those false goals and they're not realized, at least you can delude yourself to think, when I do get all this, I'll be fine. Once you have it, you realize you're still the same person. That's what you're saying. That ends up causing major problems, major depression, you know, right? I mean, we pretend here, we didn't have this hour problem, everything would be fantastic. Shem Bali says, I'm giving you this because the few times I didn't, you killed each other. I think it's a little bit. Anyway.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Want something? Larry.
Yeah. I think there's also a connection between people who are like super smart geniuses and mental illnesses.
Oh yeah, sure.
There's been a lot of those. There are a couple of famous musicians. Well, I've seen one of them in person. Child prodigy, genius, debuted with all the greatest orchestras when he was like 7 years old, 8 years old. I mean, you look at him and you see he's a nutcase. You know, I don't know, he's probably never been institutionalized at all, but he's very borderline nutcase. You know?
People don't treat other people like that. It's like being a great athlete, or maybe even possibly a brilliant, you know, student, where you almost treat, they don't grow up because people dote on them. They, you know, look at you like ATM machines, and they're going to take advantage of, or they're going to, I must be great because I have this kid. And you see sometimes it's a very, very beautiful woman may have an issue that way. Or yeah, if you, it's a lot easier to be somewhere near the middle. Anyway.
So he sums up the idea and says, but a person who is arrogant and is always seeking honor, he will never attain it. It's not like the guy who's saving up to buy a car. The arrogance leads a person to spend life disappointed. Because his desires are just too great. He wants something that's unnatural. What he really wants is that the other people will hate themselves and love him. That's what the arrogant person wants.
What time period did you write this?
250 years ago. Almost 300 years ago. Ve'en oda she'ekshem tziutok she'ilato v'kashato. And there's nothing that's as difficult to desire as that. You want people to hate themselves but love you. There were some pious people in the world that really hated themselves, but not for him. He says there were extra pious people who really were able to overcome the self-love that we all naturally have, but they didn't do it in order to love an arrogant guy. So he says the third issue really with the arrogance is that a person is going to spend a life of disappointment and sorrow. And again, he's tackling arrogance from a practical perspective. He's saying, I'm not dealing with the world to come. We dealt with that in the other chapters. Now, from a practical perspective, a person should see what he loses.